Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Behind the Racket Pod, the podcast taking you behind the racket with today's top tennis players and biggest issues facing the sport.
Behind the Racket is a community to give fans and players in the world of tennis the opportunity to open up like they have never done before.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. It can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Pandora, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com.
Special thanks to my sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at NewBalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at #NBGivesBack.
You can also help support the podcast by visiting patreon.com/behindtheracketpod and receive rewards from our travels around the world. And now.
Second time we've recorded at my place of residence. The first time, however, I had the COVID. December.
I was also frozen.
So we recorded outside. You did not catch the COVID from me.
No.
Thankfully. So this one's a little bit better. We've got two cats who are going to be joining us here time to time, Pig and Audrey. Pig, famously known as Sewer Cat, Graham.
They will interrupt.
I think Pig will definitely be the one who interrupts from time to time. You are in Tulsa. We won't talk about why. You're here in Tulsa, and that's very nice. You got to play Kirby and the Forgotten Land yesterday with my daughter.
It was exhausting.
It looked exhausting. I mean,
last level.
Yeah.
That was near right arm, right forearm cramp in that one.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how a
she's seven.
Seven. Yeah. That was interesting. How a 7 year old is meant to play that.
Yeah.
Because I put it all out there.
You did. There was sweat.
Every 3 minutes, you're like, oh, I forgot about this level.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that one. Yep, you got one more in you.
It's a fun game.
Yeah.
You can play cooperative. So it's been really, for my daughter and I to actually have a little fun game to play together. So I bought some more at the GameStop the other day with you. We saw the new tennis video game that's going to be coming out in July that looks horrendous.
Yeah, that is some of the worst graphics I have seen, plus form. You know, they're not doing, what do they call those, black ball suits or whatever, like the NBA 2K is doing. No?
I don't.
Oh. The ones that they wear so they get every motion.
I thought you were being racist. Sorry.
Oh, no. Why?
I thought that was really just a little bit awkward
and
uncomfortable for everybody.
Just fantastic.
it doesn't
look like Taylor knows how to hit a forehand, which she does pretty damn well.
Yeah, and on top of it, I think about where we are in terms of graphics.
Yeah.
This looks like it was 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
It feels like this tennis game actually is set in like 2015. Like it basically doesn't look like it. What was the one that was you would see at airports from time to time with like, Kafelnikov and like random
Unreal Surf.
Yeah.
But it is true. And I don't even know who made the game, but curious what the, I mean, maybe there just wasn't a tennis game for that long, but
really do need a good tennis game.
We
would
do,
be great.
But nobody wants to put money into tennis. That's what it comes down to.
All right. We're here in the States.
Yeah.
There's a lot of money over in Europe for the tennis.
Yeah.
They really like it there.
Yeah. Okay.
So the big news coming out of this week, of course, is the coaching situation that's going to be changing and adapting as of July 11th.
Yeah.
Right after Wimbledon. We are engaged in a group chat. Myself, you.
Have we spoken about this before?
No.
I don't even know if we've been open about this.
Yeah, no. I wanted to ask you about it specifically in regards to, we'll start here.
Yeah.
And if you haven't heard, coaching will be allowed for ATP players from July 11th is right. Basically what it's going to be done. Have you been coached in a professional tennis match?
Illegally is what you're asking.
Yes.
Yeah.
By?
Oh, I don't want to put that person on the spot.
Come on. Stan Boster for sure. Stan, I watched coach a lot.
Oh, no. Actually, during my matches, he's probably the most tame that I had out of all of them. He was more like, let's get the fuck together kind of thing.
Yeah, sure. I've definitely heard him say that.
But no, with others, when I was with Simmons on the road for a while, stuff like that, like, you know, just like, you know, move the forehand around. Like just little quick things. I'm not. As you know, I don't love a lot going on. I already have a lot going on.
Yeah.
So the ones that were near and dear to me knew, like, hey, let's just throw a couple things out there real quick.
Yeah.
But there are times, and I remember even from juniors, where I'm like, your student's serving, and you're having a full conversation.
Sure.
Like, he's in the middle of his serve. So
right.
Actually, which kind of goes into the argument, at that point in time, I thought it was almost a hindrance to their player, mm-hmm. that it was almost too much, and I didn't mind it. I was like, if I'm seeing that, there's an issue, and I'm on the better end of that issue.
Sure.
So it's, I don't know what provoked this last ditch effort to say, hey, we're just going to let
Stefanos
this go.
Tsitsipas.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
For sure?
Yes.
What's the reason behind it?
Because
then?
It's constant.
Because it's constant, yeah. And they just don't want to deal with
correct. Let's just try it out.
And see.
Doesn't seem like it's causing any real issues on the WTA side at all.
Right. Yeah.
Just give it a shot. See what
Stefanos seems to be at the forefront of a lot of.
Yes, he really does.
Bathroom change.
The things that don't actually matter in life, right. Really.
But they call it, the bathroom one, they call like the Tsitsipas rule at this point. When I played the challenger, like, yeah, you know, Tsitsipas. And I was like, so I can't go to the bathroom?
Right.
He's like, no, you can, but somebody will be sitting on top of you if you have to go.
I think it's going to be, we probably should call it the Tsitsipas rule here as well. But I mean, it happens all the time. As most people know, when I'm at a challenger, I'm pretty much, in Orlando, literally there were coaches sitting within a foot of me.
Right.
Literally. So yeah, I mean, I know that it happens all the time. I made the argument online, and I'm not alone in making this argument, that it will help the rich get richer. And to your point of it being a hindrance for some, I think the coach-pupil relationship, if you will, is kind of important so that the coach knows exactly what they need and what they don't. But again, we get to this point where those that have coaches that are good coaches are going to have certainly a distinct advantage because they have a separate set of eyes that might be able to see something that the player themselves will not.
I guess it goes into the idea, and I understand trying to level the playing field, because believe me, I'm one of those that a coach is a luxury at this point.
Yeah.
They already have the benefit of that coach for that week. Sure. You know, it's there. So are we trying to level the playing field during the match? Fine. I get that. But the benefit is there. This is already a rich get richer sport. Sure. So are 100%. You saying, yeah, should we just let all hell break loose and, you know, I don't know. You know, it's such a tough one for me because I'm pessimistic for a lot. Like, it's already, this is how tennis is. Why should I fight that situation? And again, it happens already. You know, it's not like I'm stopping it. There's many times where, you know, I'm looking over and I don't have anybody in the, you know, I remember Donaldson, Charlottesville, our first year. That was always one that came to my mind. He must have had six people with him.
Yeah, it was with the Dents at that point.
Yep.
Dad was there as well.
And I believe a physio of some sort at that time.
I think you're right.
There was more than two or three people.
Yes.
And I had nobody with me.
Sorry, it was Taylor and his dad,
yes,
Phil.
Yes.
That's right.
And I'm just looking. And of course, this goes back to like the kind of the hindrance where like he was feeling uncomfortable. So he's talking, talk more and go over to the bench. But like, I already knew that he had this luxury of having this whole team for the past week.
Yeah.
There's nothing I could do at this point.
Yeah, sure.
So if him saying calm down, hit a few extra forehands is going to make or break the match, then it's going to make or break the match. This is one that I'm a little iffy with, and it kind of goes to the idea that, you know, if there was noise going on in the background, we could play with it.
Yeah.
But since there's a rule that says we shouldn't, we can't play with it.
Right.
I think we kind of have to get to a point with certain things that we're at. But a question for you on this.
Yes.
I think it might have been Roddick. You know, he's outspoken, saying that it was one of the last differences in tennis compared to other sports.
Yeah.
How do you feel?
That's actually what I was going to get to next was the one of the things that I love so much about the sport is the problem solving aspect. It is up to you. Obviously, the physical execution is one thing. The problem solving of having a scouting report, realizing that maybe that's not working today, how do I solve something? Or if something physically for me today is not working, how do I solve that problem? I love that. You are adding just a second person who can help with that problem solving. It's not the end all be all by any means.
Right.
And again, other people have said it as well. It's not the biggest problem we have in the sport any means.
It's just so funny they came out with
no problem.
It. And just that's it.
No problem. But like, you know, the couldn't domestic done, abuse right. oh, situation so is it's
yeah,
been
I saw one of those
months,
tweets.
You
yeah,
know, right. Yeah. I have two and it's like,
oh my God. And it's true. It's true. And again, I love the timing. It's just so peculiar yes. to me of like,
yes.
let's do it now. We're going to do it now. I'm yes, like, okay.
I agree.
One last thing on that.
Yeah.
That, you know, just thinking about now, talking about mental health. And we'll talk about, I had a poor match this past weekend in Tulsa. I was here for a future. Okay. Wasn't there mentally.
Okay.
Let's say I had somebody, could be any tournament, but let's say I had somebody to go up to and say, hey, man, like, I'm struggling. Yeah. I don't want to be out here right now.
Yes.
Even beyond that match, just taking a little bit away that island that you feel.
Yeah.
Is that beneficial in the long run to tennis players?
Probably. But I don't know that this changes it because
I'm not saying it will.
Ultimately, like,
the 10 seconds you have or in between changeovers.
If you have somebody there, regardless, you're going to at least have somebody there, so you're not going to feel alone.
True, but I think that interactiveness, if we get to the point that this progresses and they're sitting at the bench, which is kind of what I wanted to do for BTR Tour, if that ever came about, was the idea if they're on the bench with you, like Davis Cup. And if that came about, I think that feeling may change a little bit of helplessness.
I do agree with that.
But it also, again, everything that we've spoken about a lot of times, it takes away, I don't want to say the 1%, but it takes away those times in tennis history that are amazing. I mean, we get that.
Yes.
But is that worth the other 99% of dealing with it? And that's the argument we make for so many things.
Yeah.
And this will be the case, but we'll see.
Two things that pop into my head here, and then we'll let you go. Number one, my favorite coaching violation of all time, Peter Lukesson, who was accused of coaching tennis Sandgren, even though they were not working together at all. He said something along the lines of nice shot, and the a lines person thought she heard something more, went over and talked to Roger Pennington, legendary USTA Pro Circuit chair umpire, and a 10-minute discussion ensued about whether somebody who's not a coach can be coaching in the midst of it was fantastic stuff.
And it ended with?
Got a coaching violation. Just the warning.
Of course. Why not?
Just the warning, but not too bad. And then to your idea of the hindrance.
Yes.
This is a personal one and is frankly one of the worst things that's ever happened to me in terms of my family. I was 16, 17 playing a match and I was playing well, but I was still losing to a player who was well ahead of where I was in terms of my caliber. I lost a couple points. Is getting to that point where it's like 5-3 in the second, something like that. And my mom, bless her heart, was saying something along the lines of, come on, you can do it. You can do it.
All right.
You can do it. You know, again, that idea of like trying to coach and like the hindrance part. Right. So I'm just like, I'm doing the best I can. And I said, I told my mom to shut the fuck up. I told my mom to shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
It was that I hit that point.
Right, you hit that, yeah, like, the breaking point.
Everything came together, right? And it was clear that it was, and and I like immediately I was like, oh Jesus Christ, what did I just do? Like,
yeah, it all came rushing. Like, yeah, yeah.
All right, 6-3. Let's get out of here. And my dad is not the guy. Is not a confrontational guy. Doesn't get mad very often. And my parents divorced
right,
for a long period of time before that.
The only thing they agreed upon.
my mom had stopped talking. Obviously, after what happened, and my dad just comes over to me as soon as I come off the court, and he said, don't you ever talk to your mother like that again. And it was just, it like
just
cut.
Fear. Yeah.
Like, I knew it was coming.
Right.
It was well-deserved. And it's still like, it's been like 84 years. It still hurts right in here. But yeah, it's an interesting point because yeah, sometimes when you are in the heat of battle,
oh yeah,
those words,
that was my father at the time too.
Really?
He was so emotional and he cared so much.
Yes.
And he was moving, and there were times where I waved to, I don't even know what would have happened if I said, shut the fuck up. But I waved him and my coach Lawrence at the time off.
I mean, this week.
Yeah.
I was there with you in Tulsa, and I was trying to do my best of being encouraging.
It wasn't getting very fucking good.
I mean, you're playing also against a University of Illinois student athlete, and that was tough for me as well. But I was trying to be as encouraging as possible. How do you balance that when you do hear it from people you love, care about, and they care about you?
I'm going to be honest. It hasn't worked very well for me.
Really?
An outside coach has been okay, has worked fine. But when they're so close, when I've gone past a certain level of comfort, it has not worked very well, which is actually interesting. Because my father, my whole life, Lawrence was 10 years. I was good with Phil. I was good with Stan. I was probably scared of Stan a little bit too.
Yeah.
Who isn't, right?
Yes.
So I think it was once I got past that comfort point where I felt like I could do it, it wasn't motivating me, and then B, it was kind of pissing me off. So it's been funny over. But last small story, Orange Bowl 16s, I think that's University of Miami, if I'm not mistaken, or is that 14s?
Okay.
Coaching violation. I said, to who? To me. Okay, interesting. Well, I was with my mom, my grandparents.
Okay.
Natalie will love this story. Yeah. I'm a little flustered here. And I said, can you show me who you're referring to?
Yeah.
Because not many people in my family, and Natalie, bless her heart, watches so much tennis now.
Yeah.
She did not at the time.
Got it.
Melanie knew, you know, she knew tennis, but she wasn't coaching me through.
Sure.
She would never. he gets down from his chair and goes and points to my grandmother's, one of her closest friends.
Oh, wow.
And says, heard it from her. This woman has never seen a tennis racket in her entire life.
Yeah.
To this day, we call her Coach Andy because of this situation. And I just think some of those situations don't have to happen. It just doesn't have to be on the chair's radar.
That might
be the end result.
Ultimately, that's the point I think that will be most beneficial of this is it's, again, one less thing that has to be worried about during match. We can focus just play, coach, whatever, it's done, move forward.
Next topic.
Yes.
Wimbledon.
Okay.
I'm not going to go into...
That's just good transition right there.
Yeah. Smooth, right? I don't want to go into like the basics.
Yeah.
I want to know how you feel about equalizing surfaces and if that's affecting tennis and taking away... I feel like something is not spoken about, but highly affects the game today.
The fact that everything's so slow?
Slowing grass down, slowing hard courts down, almost at times speeding clay courts up in some ways. Is that equalization taking away the beauty of the surfaces?
I think you could make an argument, at least on the men's side, that obviously it is provided with three of the greatest champions of all time because of the fact that, you know, Rafa getting to play Wimbledon because of the fact that it is slowed down.
Mm-hmm.
US Open being slowed down allows him more opportunities there. I think you could certainly make that argument. There's two points to it, right? Like, my personal opinion is that I think we need more diversity in terms of court speeds. Mm-hmm. I think I love that, and how you, again, going back to that idea of the problem solving,
yeah,
how you adapt and how you change right. from week to week.
You play on carpet and you're like, right. what do we got to do
yeah,
here?
Yeah, exactly. I love that aspect of
it. It's great for your job too. Yeah, it makes it so interesting. Yeah. Right? It's different tennis every week. Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's something to be said for a little bit more normality from week to week for players. That being said, we're also not doing anything. You know, the ball changes are so different, and that's such a pain. And
right.
What's the viewpoints right behind? I don't know.
I know it's funny. The things that I think should stay the same will never stay the same.
Yeah.
In terms of stringing balls,
correct. All should be the same.
All should be the same. But then in terms of surfaces, I think once the balls are the same and everything else is constant, let that be the one variable.
Yeah. I did you hear from anybody in terms of this week qualifying how Roehampton was playing?
Even slower.
Really?
Even slower. I mean,
that's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I was pretty out of it last year.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I qualified it, I just didn't even understand what was
2019,
happening. 2019. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So it was even further ago. And then 2020 was similar, but I heard even this year.
Well, 2020, they didn't have anything. I don't know if you remember, but it was during COVID.
That is true. So 2021. So it was 2019 and then 2021. That's what happened. Gotcha. So then it was 2021 that I heard similar. Yeah. And then this year it got even slower.
Yeah.
Slices are fine. They still kind of go through. But you hit like a pretty good topspin forehand.
Yes.
And it just hits the ground and goes straight up. And it's shocking.
Well, look, let's talk about who's at top of the game on both the men's and the women's side.
Yeah.
Specifically, Rafa looking at a slam. Slow it down for him. Iga. She was a junior Grand Slam champion there, just like you, and a random coach who was here in Tulsa this week as well. But she has always talked about how she's not comfortable on the grass.
Right.
Slow it down. And now, yeah, I mean, you're having more and more slow surfaces top to bottom, and I enjoyed last year in Orlando when we had the Challenger there because it was so lightning fast.
Yeah.
And so you just saw some players just getting so frustrated and other ones are just loving the speed. Like Nico Mejia just out of nowhere. He's just like, I love it here. He was so excited to be playing on that kind of court. I think there's something to be said for that. Those storylines about how players have to adjust.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I was almost disappointed and I was fortunate enough to qualify and even on site felt slower than Roehampton at that point because it wasn't as beaten up. But I don't know. I'm not sold on the direction that we're going in. And I heard about Indian Wells this year, and they said it was the slowest they've ever played on in terms of any court, hard court wise. So why?
Yes.
Why are we doing it? I don't know. I think at a certain pace, and Indian Wells has gone beyond this, it doesn't make the game look that pretty.
Acapulco this year. This year, there was a brand new stadium. Everything got resurfaced and obviously brand new court as well. Yeah, it was extraordinarily slow. And that's why night number one, you had the latest night of tennis ever because of the fact you had three straight 3+ hour matches. And there is a very distinct correlation because of the fact that the court was incredibly slow. Now, you can also argue they got Rafa there.
Right.
Why do you think he came there? You know why. You know why the court is what it is. So, I mean, there's something to be said for that because the crowd was there every single night, absolutely packed.
Right. So you can't argue that, you know, people don't want to watch that because they had packed stadiums there. But do we need every tournament to be that slow?
Yes.
For TV? I don't know. So
I'm going to miss the Russians being there. You know, and
he just got Medvedev.
Lost a day
to as Bautista, we're recording that, this. That ends his
grass season.
I mean, I remember listening to him at French, which is not how, you know, number one player in the world should speak, but this is Medvedev, you know, basically saying, I'm here playing clay, whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
I can't wait for the grass.
Right.
And I remember that so clearly, almost not revolving his season because he loves the summer swing, but revolving his season around the grass and really making a push.
Yes.
I mean... It could change a career path. It really does. We know how quickly careers can change in that time. We don't know what Wimbledon looks like. who knows who breaks through? What does that look like after? Yes.
And what does it mean? Other than they make a lot of money.
Right. Right. And also, what does this mean? I'm curious how Medvedev rebounds into the hardcourt swing. Is he more motivated than ever to say shut the fuck up to everybody, which he loves doing? Or is he like kind of deterred and be like, this is just a pain in the ass right now?
Right. Sabalenka on the women's side. I mean, there are a lot of interesting storylines specifically to that tournament, this swing, that we're not going to get. And that's disappointing. I do understand why. I don't know. I find it kind of be a mixed bag. I don't know. I'm fine. I think I'm fine with either choice that Wimbledon would have made, but it still doesn't make me happy either.
Right.
Way.
There was really no great win for it.
Because imagine if Medvedev wins the US Open again.
Right.
What Putin's going to do with that win.
Yeah, it's difficult. I think the only one that I was looking towards, I don't even want to go back into this, was let them keep the points from last year and see where that played out. And then let the people play to this year. But a question for you on this one was motivation factor. Mm. I tweeted it out a little bit and got mixed motions and responses. What level? I think it's going to be funny. I think there's an intermediate level, but where does the prize money not bother, you know, to push that extra distance? Yeah. What ranking point? Like, I think we're going to see qualifiers, guys that are 80 to 100 making that extra push because you might see a guy that's 30 that's maybe not gunning for the slam. That's, you know, I was curious where.
Yeah, I found myself thinking about it more from the players who are in the 50-60 spot who maybe had made a third round last year and
looking to quarter maybe.
Yeah, because the idea of the defending points.
Oh, okay.
And that idea, right? Right. And it's just, so there's no longer that pressure because there can't be.
So which direction does that go in?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Right, because does the...
Just a cash tournament.
Right, and then that's where my question is, does the 100 grand make them put their body on the line? I don't know. I haven't been 50 in the world. I'm not 100% sure how much each guy is pulling in.
Yeah.
Is that extra 50K going to make the difference? That's why I think like a qualifier, that every dollar right now, and now the dollars are more than ever... Are they going to put it out there?
Qualifying did wrap up today, I believe. Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure that everybody who qualified was Australian. I think it ended up being like six total. It was pretty crazy. But
everybody. And Richard.
And Alexander Richard.
We're happy for
Swiss.
Him.
Swiss, yeah.
We're happy for him.
Yes, we are. And Jason Kubler, I'm just going to put this out there because he actually, when I talked to him in Little Rock, he, on the flight from Little Rock to Orlando, downloaded and started listening to the podcast. Owes me a podcast.
Mm.
Been putting me off since April.
So when he quarters, we're getting it. We're getting it.
Damn it. Flipping Kubler. Congratulations, though, buddy. All right. It's your show. You run it.
You want me to press a button or something?
Yeah, no. Yeah,
I don't know how to work this.
Yeah, which this is Ty.
People.
That's Ty Kwiatkowski.
Take that off.
I don't think he's mentally there. I think he's fine. Okay. He wanders to other things.
Curb is a good way to go.
Yeah. I mean, what a transition. I want everything in my life. I want day to day to be transitioned with Curb.
I do too. I want Larry David to be in my life, frankly.
Yeah, like at times.
Yeah.
Yeah, not all the time. Because I live my life already thinking about it.
Yeah.
Once the ice cream. I was going to say parlor, like I was in the 1920s. so I was going to get ice cream. I was just thinking if I should ask to sample vanilla ice cream. And I just remember during the episode, and I was like, that would have been absolutely miraculous. It was just, you know what vanilla tastes like.
Where'd you get ice cream here?
It wasn't here.
No.
Okay. It was in New York. Yeah.
I mean, Brahms, you don't want to.
This is so random.
Yes.
And we might have to take this out. But it's something I was thinking about.
Okay.
I like talking about difficulties in tennis and what makes them actually incredible in the end. We talk about individual sports and people like bringing up other sports. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I was thinking about how I struggle at times finding that motivation.
Yeah.
I went into just a joke of like, oh, how many tennis balls have I hit in my life? Mm. Does that compare to any other sport in terms of repetitions that you, like I picture baseball players, soccer players, when they get the opportunity, it must be so exciting because it's not few and far between, but it's seldom. I mean, like for a baseball player, you know, it's every, how many players? I'm really bad at that.
It's 30-man rosters.
Okay. When you rotate, when you, so you bat every.
Rotate.
Is this bad? Am I?
You get four at bats a year. Or a day. Excuse me. That's
but different. It feels like a year.
Four at bats.
Okay.
Per day.
That's what I thought. Around 3-4.
162 games. Okay. You're probably playing 125 to 130.
But I'm just saying, four, in so terms of four, that one game, though.
You get about 450 to 500 at bats per year.
You know, okay, so that's baseball. With soccer, yeah, I mean, you're probably seeing touches more often than not, yes. But it's not an ongoing thing. And golf is a similar, people love comparing it, yes. An individual sport.
You hit 72 shots a day.
There you go. It's a lot. Mm-hmm. It's a lot. And A, going on the side of like, if you play tennis, you're like psychotic to some extent to yes. get yourself in that frame of mind. But I don't think I really understood the difficulty of why some people, like, when you say, I just can't hit another tennis ball, it's because we've hit a lot of fucking tennis balls.
I think the best one that pops in my head yeah. is dribbling a basketball.
Okay, interesting.
That's probably the one where I think in terms of contact with a piece of equipment.
Yeah, closer.
Probably definitely the closest because you're dribbling so much.
Right. And then I guess we have to think about how many times, 48-minute game, how many times are you touching a basketball as a player. I mean, you know, unless I just think there's a lot. And I don't know really where I'm going with this, to be honest. It was more along the lines that this just came out recently. And I was talking, I was like, yeah, sometimes I just get tired of hitting a tennis ball. Mm. And people are like, oh, it feels so good. And I was like, I've been fortunate a decent amount of clean tennis balls.
Yeah.
Not many,
yes,
but enough. And there's really no way around it in this sport. Like when I was thinking about what I'm going to do this summer,
yeah.
I was like, I'm just going to hit a lot of tennis balls more and more and more.
So like in terms of like a different type of training to like, if you're a basketball player, you can do the fitness component. You can work on shot. You can work on dribbling.
Passing, whatever, you know, you have to hit tennis balls. There's really no way around it. I mean, you have the outliers of the Opelkas of the world and stuff like that, but it makes it impossible.
I don't know if it makes it impossible.
It makes it where you have to cross a certain boundary to get that
you have to mentally be...
Right, there's a different
level
mentally that I don't think we've compared to other sports in the past.
This is fascinating because it goes to a conversation we had with a young man on Tuesday, you and I, a young Mr. Voss, and I don't know his first name. Who was just so passionate. He was just telling us how that's all he wants to do is just hit tennis balls. And he was so excited he had made the final round of qualifying here. Matthew, thank you. It made the final round of qualifying here, which is the first time he'd made the final round of qualifying at a 25K.
And he'd been 6 years.
In 6 years of playing. And I found myself, I've been thinking about that interaction quite a bit.
It was a lot. I mean, it was after my loss, so I tried to be as political as possible. I was definitely a little down, but I mean, I'll veer off because I don't think I knew exactly where I was going to go with that.
Yeah.
Especially coming back to equalizing surfaces. Actually, it comes back to that a bit. The style of play isn't that drastic anymore.
The differences in style
The differences
of play?
In style of play from player to player, I think, is coming down to if you're not at 8 to 12 balls a rally minimum, like if you can't do that, like I feel like what are you doing? You're not competing at the best level.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said for the stylistic differences have been minimized immensely. I think that's absolutely correct.
Because Matthew came out and said, I rely on a lot of my serve and forehand. Yes. That was the one thing because I asked him, you know, what makes you good? There are very few players. They do. There are very few players that are 1-2 punches. And 1-2 punches is very rarely a 1-2 punch anymore.
Yes.
It's just returners are too good at, you know, they're retrieving balls better than ever. So that 1-2 punch is now, I don't know, 5-6 punch if it's a great point, you know?
Can I ask you about your game specifically?
Okay.
I have memories of your first initial run in Charlottesville, 2015, 16. I just remember thinking.
That's when our friendship started, but don't worry, you don't have to remember that.
Yeah, well, it feels like decades. I remember distinctly thinking about how well you were able to go down the line from both corners well and get through the court.
Mm-hmm.
How much do you think your game has changed since then, or how much of that is court speed changes, things along those lines, because I know that has not been as easy for you to do of late.
Yeah, I think there was a few transitions. At that point in time, I was playing kind of my junior style of tennis because that was new to pro, and it was working. I was excited, moving well, feeling good. I think I had a few transitions from there, and I think in those 5 years or so, almost six, tennis changed a lot, where certain tactics would be in that 6 to 8 ball range of completing a point. And once I was getting up in the rankings, I didn't feel like I was hitting the ball at that point hard enough. Mm. And that's where things had to change. So I think tennis goes through, you know, history as you know, repeats itself. And so you have to go the opposite direction. It's like, okay, well, now we got to a certain point where I can't hit harder than I'm hitting. Yeah. So now we have to look towards angles, or we have to look towards other things. So I think it went in that motion where I got to a point where I was like, I have to hit harder, harder, harder. Okay, now it's not working. I'm missing. Now we have to restart. Get back to that beginning. Now let's see if we could push people off the court. Well, they're moving too well. So what can we find the intermediate? So I think for me, that was the biggest mental grind, was the vast majority of players. Fix is the wrong word, but evolved mentally to say, I'm okay with being out here for 12 balls.
Got it.
Where that was good enough. I was running down balls. I was moving the ball well. But if I was out there for a decent amount, even at that level, challenger-wise, it was breaking guys down fairly quickly. Yeah. Where I think even we're seeing at the college level now too, where it's not, you know, that's not enough anymore. And I think what we thought was enough is just not cutting it. And then that was always, I think that's why everybody's looking for that 1%, you know, racket, string, should I fix this serve, new coach, because it's so tough because everybody's at this specific level. And I think court surface, everything is leading towards people kind of playing similar styles.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Anything else you need to throw in there?
Really, it's just fucking hot here, man.
I don't
love it. You turn around and there's tornadoes in the sky, and then...
It wasn't a tornado, it was just lightning.
But it was... There was no clouds in the sky like 10 minutes prior to it.
You got to understand that when you have this type of heat and humidity, it causes things from the surface to rise and... Yeah?
Resonates from your body in particular, or how's that work?
Yeah, obviously the sweat from
right, that profusely drips.
So much.
Ooh.
Wow, that's exactly what people want to take with them from this podcast episode, is specifically my sweat.
Right. Well, I mean, it's good audio, at least this time.
Well.
Not great.
It's not great.
It's fine.
It's very difficult.
I mean, hopefully sometimes. We won't get a bad Apple review, which I just searched for the first time in our 2-year podcast. Won't happen again.
Can you just stop being a whiny millennial?
Yeah, well, I can't. You can't. Obviously, no, we know that.
It's never going to stop. What's next for you?
We have new events on the schedule, actually. We didn't really go into that.
Yes.
Anne Hortman. I spoke to her. She was very excited to run her first men's challenger at Rome, Georgia.
Oh, nice.
So she had 360Ks. So it's nice. People are stepping up.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know. We didn't really go into this. We don't have to. This is definitely a longer podcast. But... tournaments were canceled this summer.
Yeah.
And it's been difficult for USTA, you know, privately funded events. We're sadly seeing Binghamton work so hard, couldn't do it this year. We had Aptos gone this year. What else am I missing? Anything?
Winnetka didn't come back on the schedule.
Winnetka didn't come back.
Yeah.
So we had two that stepped up so far. We have Rome, Georgia, and Indianapolis.
Yes.
Two that have in my recent history, I've never had a challenger.
So the, Rome, I know, has an Indianapolis. Obviously,
right, a men's event. Yeah,
they had a two. Yes, correct.
Right.
Indianapolis had the 250 for so many years, the RCA championships, mm-hmm. which is something that was near and dear to my heart.
You old fuck.
It's not that. Not. It's only been.
You were 40 when you were attending it.
Stop.
That is his issue.
I think it ended 15 years ago now. Okay. Somewhere around. Maybe even less than that, okay. maybe 12 years ago. But Rajiv Ram is behind this, one of the people behind this in Indianapolis. That's where he is from. And I think the hope is to try and get to a point where, at the very least, we're having this challenger in Indianapolis on a regular basis, if not having it expand and be a larger event, maybe even to a 250 level.
Yeah, and... It's tough. It's tough for these people to get challenged. These are people, again, I have to state this, that love tennis.
Correct.
They absolutely love tennis. So anything that they can do is amazing. And I was speaking to Tulsa. Obviously, TU's grounds are beautiful.
Right.
Stunning.
Yep.
They're almost too smart. They're like, yeah, you know, we've been asked to put on challengers and we're thinking about it. What do they get out of it? It's correct. A lot. You know, it's a lot to, you know, they might have camps. They might have this, whatever it may be. So that's a lot of effort.
I want to say this, if I can make a plea towards the ATP, is to, I think the housing requirement.
Help me, I'm poor.
The housing requirement has been so helpful for players.
Right.
It was absolutely the heart and the brain is in the right place in terms of the motivation of why you have a 5-day housing requirement for players. It's great because it saves you guys as players money. Here in the States, it has become a hindrance. It has become a real issue because, as everybody who's listening to this is in the States knows, hotel costs are absurd right now.
Also, housing opportunities in the U.S. are greater than some of these other challengers.
That's exactly right.
It's more
capability in a lot of these cities to put tennis players in great family housing.
Right.
And it would be worthwhile for the ATP to examine that, look at how this is something that a lot of these tournaments can do, and maybe just tweak that rule a little bit to allow for more of that. Because I think, again, it's in a lot of different countries right now where you don't have to pay $200 per night per room. You're able to put on these challengers for a much lower cost.
Right.
Right now in the States, you can't. And that is such a pain. And I know there are so many people who have been trying to solve that problem. It's hard because that's just, it's flat out money.
Yeah.
And so I would hope if anybody from the ATP is listening, that is one thing that could just be simply tweaked, much like we tweak the coaching rule in the span of a heartbeat, and just maybe tweak it so that we allow for more housing to be put on, not just hotel.
We are in a really sad situation. I don't want to end this on a bad note, so we have to add one more after this.
Sure.
We're in a sad situation where I do believe players would say I would rather have more opportunities than the housing situation.
I agree.
Where that wasn't the case 4 years ago when we were talking correct. About the situation, but now that tennis, you know, we don't say it, but tennis is in a tough place and dealing with COVID repercussions, that we have to make that decision. And I think players would take the opportunities right now. If you could say, hey, we could have 6 more events on the schedule, but you're going to have to pay your own way, or any housing situation that they have, we say, of course, right now.
I think you're right. I think it's probably not 100% unanimous on that. I think a lot of people, especially the doubles guys, will want to take the housing.
Right.
But I think you're right. I think right now we are, I think, potentially in a growth period.
Yeah.
I mean, we're seeing more and more people playing. To have professional events in more cities would be positive in that regard, so people can see that high-level tennis. On top of it, you know, more opportunities for players allows more points to be had. All of that is possible, and it's difficult that's one rule that we haven't tweaked to make it a little bit more accessible. How about we end with the fact that one of my cats right now is going nuts?
Yeah, absolutely. Zooms. A little zoomy action.
Yeah, that's awesome.
How's your tennis game?
I haven't played since November.
Good. Probably start getting a little clean then.
I mean,
are you using Prestige?
Yeah,
that's
the head chest. Prestige is just like I just.
That's exactly the racket you shouldn't be using.
But it works for me.
I don't know if it does.
It works. I hit it so clean
on one side.
Well, yeah, but I've got some clunkiness on the backhand wing.
So it has nothing to do with the racket.
As soon as I change to that extreme Western,
yeah,
whoa, just nice, heavy, good pattern.
It would sit up on the grass, though.
Well, sure. Yeah, right.
But that's when your plan B, your serve and volley tactics come into play.
God, I was actually
glorious.
I mean, two-handed backhand volley
on both sides.
I would get low for that backhand volley. I could do some things with it because I use the two fists. Should try it sometime. You know who should try it? Christopher Eubanks.
His volleys can definitely use some fixins.
Boy.
Some fixins
like you get at Cracker Barrel. It's been nice having you here in Tulsa. I appreciate very much having you spend time with my daughter. That was very kind. I appreciated the opportunity to get to spend time with you in the midst of a 8-hour heat delay on Tuesday. So thank you for being here. I do appreciate it as your friend, and I want everybody to know that. So.
That was very sweet of you. Yeah,
you get one per year.
Take it.
Okay. This is a special edition of the podcast. Marnie, you are on a podcast right now.
Oh, my gosh.
Yesterday, you spent time with Noah Rubin.
Yes.
What are your thoughts about Noah?
He did pretty good at Kirby.
Okay. What do you think about him? How does he look?
Tall.
He's tall?
Yeah.
Really?
I think he's tall.
I think he's a little fella.
Oh, come on. He's like a very tall Mary.
A very tall Mary?
Yeah, he's like a grown-up Mary. Because Mary is really tall.
Like your friend Mary?
Yes.
He's like a grown-up Mary.
Yes.
Okay.
And Mary is very tall. She's taller than me.
Okay.
And I'm very tall.
Right.
I have no idea.
You have nothing else? Okay, what else do you want to say to the people?
Okay, I have no idea what's going on.
Okay.
Like, what is happening?
What if we push this button?
I have no idea what I'm doing here.
Oh, come on. I want to press the buttons to see what they do.
Okay.
That was weird.
Yeah, that's Ty Kwiatkowski. He's a tennis player.
Sounded like a witch.
Yeah.
Okay, where are the crickets? Where are these crickets? Like, why are there crickets?
I don't think he's mentally there. I think his mind kind of wanders to other things.
You've talked to him on the phone. That's Chris. Oh. You've talked to him on the phone. You remember him?
Nope.
Yeah. Not many people do.
Nope. Okay. I'm going to tell a joke now.
Okay.
So, what do you get when you cross a monkey and a chicken?
I don't know.
Diarrhea. Anyone? Okay, this is.
Say goodbye, Marnie.
Okay. Goodbye. Oh, for crying out loud.
The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoahRubin33, at MikeCTennis, and at Behind the Racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us expand and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.